there are four phases to Jacob's trouble. First, the regathering of Israel will grow. It will expand until it reaches an optimum or a maximum. Second, there will be a period of safety and security. Peace will be found in the land. Third, a great calamity, a host of nations led by God, will pounce on Israel to destroy her nationalistic growth and identity. Fourth, a miraculous intervention will occur to save Israel against unbelievable odds by the Lord of hosts. God will go forth and fight against Israel's enemies as he fought in the days of old. Let's examine each of these phases. Four phases. First phase. The regathering of Jews and Israel will grow. I'm suggesting to you, friends, that it is not complete. The accomplishment of Israel as a nation today, since its inauguration in 1948, is nothing short of a miracle. Population is slightly larger than 2.5 million people. Its geographical size is slightly larger than half of Connecticut. You're familiar with Connecticut. If you think of Connecticut as the second smallest state in the Union, if you take half of it, that's about the size of it. The land development and reclamation and use is as advanced as any nation in the world, and in some areas they lead the world. Its science and technology is unbelievable. It's the only Mideast country that has a nuclear capability. For a country that's just been born in 1948, that is a fact. They are now developing their own aircraft manufacturing, solid fuel rockets, and solar steam plants. They can really boast about progress in civil rights. They have integrated people from many lands with many mixtures, ideologies that are unbelievable. Let me share some with you. For example, there are four basic groups. The radicals, 5%, the liberals, 70%, the conservatives, 20%, the orthodoxy, 5%, with a multiplicity of religions, the Muslims, the Christians, the Druzes, the Greek Orthodox, the Armenians, while governed by a multiplicity of laws and courts, the Roman courts, the Palestinian legislation, the religious law, the civil law, the English common law, and Israeli legislation, which is now becoming more and more significant. All of these within various types of courts, rabbinical courts, religious courts, civil courts, Muslim courts, Christian courts, and very special courts. With all of these complexities, one would say, could they survive? They seem to be disunity. You have to admit that this experiment in nationalism would fail were it not for some kind of help on the outside. Perhaps the Israelis may not be completely aware of this. We Bible students are. That experiment in nationalism will not fail. It appears to me that this first phase of Jacob's trouble is not complete. The regathering of Israel is not complete, and I would like to suggest two reasons for this. First, in Deuteronomy 3, 26 to 28, God speaks to Moses. Speak no more to me of this matter. Get thee up to the top of Pisgah, and lift up thine eyes eastward, westward, northward, southward. And behold what thy eyes see, and I will cause them to inherit all the land that thou wilt see. Do we believe this scripture? Do we think this is an exercise in rhetoric or a piece of poetry? Do you know where Pisgah's mountain is located? It is not in Israel. Pisgah's mountain is known as Mount Nebo, which is located in Jordan. Now, if you were to go to the top of Mount Nebo right now, and you took the four points of the compass and looked as far as you could, you know the kind of land you would be seeing? More than what Israel has right now. You would be seeing practically all of Jordan. You would be seeing a big portion of Syria, and you would be, if you took the compass and circumscribed the circle, you would be taking a piece of that whole Mideast. Israel is not yet in the land that's been promised her. And it appears her borders will expand. The Six-Day War of 1967 has already brought in acreage three times its original state. And it must now govern 1,300,000 Arabs, which is about 50% of its own population. Israel will, however, in terms of this peace, give up some of this land, particularly the Sinai. But Israel will never give up Jerusalem. Israel will never give up Jerusalem. Now come back. Have you any idea of what the acquisition of the old city of Jerusalem has meant to Israel? Let me relate an incident that happened in 1968. In the old city. It was a memorial service that was going on in Israel. And picture the old city, picture the wall, you know, the Wailing Wall, but we know it as part of Solomon's Temple. And as you picture this wall, picture all the Jews just sitting around looking at this wall. And there was a memorial service, and there were six speakers speaking. These were Jews, not Bible students, Jews. And they looked at the wall, and each of them commented. And the sixth speaker got up and said, "Think. This can mean only one thing. Either the Messiah is coming very soon, or he is here already." The acquisition of Jerusalem is more than a symbol of its nationalism. It is the embodiment and fulfillment of a long, long, aching promise to be fulfilled that the Messiah has or must come to Israel. Herein lies the trouble with Gog of Magog. The pressure is on by the four powers. Even the Pope is helping out to force Israel to give up Jerusalem. The Security Council of the United Nations voted just recently 14-0. 14-0. You know, these are unusual votes when they come out that way. That Israeli must give up Jerusalem. Israel will never give up Jerusalem. How true, how accurate the prophetic word that Israel will stand alone with the world. The second reason for believing that the regathering is not complete is found in the pressing objective of the Young Republic, and that is this. Israel wants all Jews who want to, who can, and in some cases who must, immigrate to Israel. Now think about this. We have to take a look at Jewry in the world here to get a real good handle on it. There's about 13,600,000 Jews in the world. 5,800,000 are in the United States. 4,054,000 are in Russia. 2,700,000 are in Israel. Only 18% of the Jews in the world are in Israel. 82% are on the outside. Israel wants to bring home the congregations of Jewry in two areas. Islam, there's about 500,000 there, and communism. 4 million Jews still are in Russia. In fact, this is about 2 weeks ago. Golda Meir sent out an invitation for all Jews in the Arab come back to Israel, to leave. To leave these Jews in these areas will lead them to the mercy of the discriminatory policies of these governments, and incidentally some of these governments have either taken the lives of some of them. The Jews are well aware and sensitive of what happens with Jews in different countries. The Jewish massacres, the Tsarist Russia is an example, the Cossack massacres, all of these have in many ways started this whole thing of what we call Zionism. Remember the Dreyfus affair, which had a profound influence on Herzl. Herzl we would regard as the founder of Zionism. Now this desire to bring out Russia and to bring out Islam will cause their population to triple. Young Israel is not only expecting this, but wanted. The United States has this 5,700,000 with about 2,581,000 in New York City. Incidentally, the more people, there are more Jews in New York City than there is in Israel. It's not unlikely that the people in the United States will leave for Israel. It's not likely that they will do this. They probably will remain. But it's very likely those in Russia will leave. Very likely for those in Islam will leave. Incidentally, the support Israel has from the United States Jews is phenomenal. Phenomenal. You know, during the Six-Day War, which I don't know if we can call it a war, but look back, you know, it was here and it was there. During that Six-Day War, they received 10,000 applications down in the Israeli embassy in Washington a day. 10,000 applications to join up. They got so much applications, they said, stop, we can't process them enough. They raised over $100 million in one day to support that war. Friends, what I'm suggesting to you is based on the evidence that the regathering of Israel has not been complete. It has not leveled off. There has yet got to be more. The land pledged to Moses will be met. And I suspect more short wars will occur to accomplish this. Population will collect to fill this new land annexation. And in fact, I would suspect that we will see and hear of many more persecutions in Islam and Russia to cause the pressure for the Israelis to move on. The second phase of Jacob's trouble, there will be a period of safety and security. Peace will be found in the land. The scriptures is clear. Israel will enjoy a period of peace. Now we wonder, how can this be when there is hostility encircling her with all these Arabs? The odds against Israel are great. The Arabs, I think, number a ratio of 50 to 1, population-wise. 10 to 1, an advantage in armed forces. About 4 to 1, weapon superiority. With France shifting to the Arab side, and I'm not sure they're going to shift back again, and the United States still on the tightrope, the United States is neither here nor there, Israel really stands alone. Particularly against the Soviet colossus. The answer for peace in Israel, if we try to understand what the Bible means, what kind of a peace are we talking about? Well, there are three types of peace. There's what we call a natural peace. You know, natural peace is where there's mutual love and mutual respect. Then there's what we call a negotiated peace. And negotiated peace is there's no love, but there is mutual respect. Then there's what they call a forced peace. There's no love, no respect, but there is peace and it's forced. The intense hatred that exists between the Arabs and the Israelis suggests that a forced peace will probably prevail in Israel. Russia, the United States, and the United Nations are committed to preserve the peace, and probably will force a peace. The pressures are building up from many, many groups, particularly the undeveloped countries. The Big Four have met in private conferences, and they've already made a couple of proposals, and they've been resoundingly rejected. But they're attempting to come up with a proposal that could be accepted by both sides. But there is an issue in all of these proposals, and the issue is we must give up Jerusalem. And Israel will never give up Jerusalem. Israel will never be able to count on the United States. Israel will stand alone. Some of you might think the United States may champion the cause of Israel. Forget it. Remember in March 1948, the United States, under Warren Austin, who was our delegate at the time, addressed the United Nations asking partitioning of Palestine be suspended. He asked for the birth of Israel be held up. The United States that day, now known as Black Friday by the Jews, read Abba Iban, my people, that the brother had suggested yesterday, describes the whole incident there. The United States, that day was called Black Friday by the Jews because the United States voted to suspend partitioning. Incidentally, the Pope is getting involved in the power talks too. And we might find some rather involvement here. You know, Russia is trying to give the impression that the situation in the Middle East is very explosive. Egypt is trying to give the impression that the situation in the Suez Canal is very explosive in order to get the United Nations settlement favorable to herself. And actually, the situation is so stable. Some of you are even planning to go to Israel, I understand, in a couple of weeks. I think we have some sisters that are going down. I know a whole contingent in the East are going over to Israel. And they don't seem to be in any way concerned about it. See, so you read the papers and it's very explosive. But you see what happens is, the Egyptians have to do some shooting every once in a while to let the world know that we don't want them to stay like this, you see? The Israelis want to negotiate peace directly with the Arabs. Now, there are two things that are really troubling this negotiated peace. Two factors. One is the water rights. You wonder, how are they all fighting over that little land when there's so much land over there? You're right, there is an awful lot of land, but it's all desert. Most of it is desert. And really, they're fighting for the land where the water is located. It's really a water fight. And you can't blame either side, to try to stay in a land where there's water. Without water, you can't exist. I believe, and this is my personal opinion, that we will experience within the next 5 years a major technological and scientific breakthrough in what I call water desalinization and land reclamation. I foresee a network of pipes crisscrossing in the form of grids, translating large barren lands in the Negev Desert, Jordan, Mount Nebo area, Pisgah Mountain, and even to the northern parts of Syria. And I believe that this reclamation, water reclamation, will be done so economically. In fact, Israel at the present time leads the world, even the United States, in solar converters. You know what solar converters are? They are methods of getting fresh water from the salt water with the use of the sun. The process has already been technically proven. It's just a question of doing it economically. I think they do it for something like $1.97 a gallon, whereas we get water from our reservoir somewhere around 7 cents a gallon. So you see, there's a real economic gap to get that to be more economical. But I believe there will be a breakthrough. I believe we will come across a process. And when that happens, you see, water will be a little more abundant. And there will not be this land agitation. because then there'll be plenty of land, but now with the water. The third phase, the great calamity, a host of nations will pounce on Israel to destroy her nationalism and identity. A third empire, like the first two, pagan Rome, Nazi Germany, and there's a third that wants to exterminate Israel, free of them. The scriptures is clear that it's Gog from the land of Magog in the northern part will lead a host of nations for this destruction. I would like to suggest to you that the land of Magog is Russia. And here are five reasons why. First, Gog comes from the land of the north. It's a power which develops in the latter day, and the rise of Russia, incidentally, with the Bolshevist revolution in 1916, has been phenomenal. That's only 53 years ago, or thereabouts, 56 years ago, compared to America, 201 years. It is right now, Russia is a major power in the world, and it is directly north of Israel. Check the map, by the way. I believe you will find Jerusalem 35 degrees and 10 minutes of latitude, and Moscow is 36 degrees and 40 minutes. You can't be further north than that. Only 1 degree difference. The second reason, Russia has not only been a formidable foe with some of its political ideologies, but more important, materialistic communism is a death threat to all forms of religion and even the very reverence and worship of Jehovah God. Russia is against theism and Zionism. Third reason, the genealogy in Genesis 10, 1 to 2 suggests it. Let me read a part of this. Now, these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And unto them, sons born after the flood. The sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Magi, Javan, Tubal, Meshach, and Tyrus. Seven sons, one of which is Magog, which migrated north, migrated to the Caucasian area, the Volga, which later became the land of Magog. Now, this genealogy is significant. Look at the other nations comprising the host that will pounce on Israel. Gomer. Gomer settled west of the Volga, which is now Germany, probably East Germany. Ancient Persia, to the east, encompassed land all the way to the east, which is now considered the Far East. And I would even suggest that it might even include China, the Far East, all the way from Persia down to the end. Hence, the host of nations might be Russia as God, East Germany, China, the Balkans, the Arabian nations are in total the communistic bloc. A fourth reason for identifying Gog with Russia is in the translation itself. A more accurate translation of Gog is this. It is the chief of Rosh, the chief of Rosh, or the prince of Russia. Magog seems to be the land of Russia, and God is its ruler of its latter days. Now this is plot that we have yet to see God emerge in Russia. God has not come forward yet. I don't believe Stalin, Khrushchev, Kosygin, Brezhnev are princes referred to here. We still look forward to a mighty leader of the communistic world who will recklessly unleash the forces restrained for many years and fit the scriptural description of Gog from the land of the north. He will be a man of stature, power, and arrogance, like Mao Zedong. But Mao Zedong, I believe, is now in his waning years. But we still look forward to the emergence of this Gog. A fifth reason to identify Gog with Russia is in her policies and her relationships with other nations. Russia has always engaged in aggression against the weak through intimidation, subversion, insurrection, revolution, and out-and-out invasion, like Czechoslovakia, Finland, Latvia, Poland. I say Poland because I know a lot of Polish friends are here. Hungary, Czechoslovakia, how did they get occupied? By invitation? Out-and-out invasion. I wouldn't be too surprised right now if Russia doesn't have the invasion of Israel on the drawing board. The scriptures say these nations will pounce on Israel while she is in safety and peace. Let's examine some of the reasons Russia might have to invade Israel and attempt to scatter her to the wind. Why would Russia want to invade Israel? First, internally, Russia is experiencing a dichotomy. Its government, its leaders, its resources are supporting the Arab nations. But 4 million Russian Jews are supporting and giving loyalty to Zionism in Israel. A dichotomy. A part of Russia is ripping. The major part supporting the Arabs, a very minor part supporting Israel. The Russian leaders are faced with this dilemma of a ripping internal dichotomy. Are you aware that most of the leaders in Israel are former Russian Jews? Levi Eshkol was born in Russia. Golda Meir was born in the United States, but she lived in Russia most of her life. They've all come from Russia. And there are many Russian Jews right now, and the Russians are beginning to feel this ripping. In fact, are you aware that the very first settlement in 1881, Pita Tivka, the first Jewish settlement in Israel, was 15 Russian Jews. They weren't any other Jews but Russians. Second, Russia has said to Israel, with the United States and the United Nations support, that Israel must give up all the land acquired during the Six-Day War. But Israel will never give up Jerusalem. Never give up Jerusalem. It will fight to the very end, even if it means its extinction. This unyielding posture of Israel is not only embarrassing Russia, but like David of old, is now having a face-to-face confrontation with Goliath. A third reason why Russia isn't of invasion appears imminent lies in the conflict and provocation of a communistic ideology. It will be during Jacob's trouble that communism will be given its death blow. I don't know whether you're aware of it or not, but Israel is employing a communal concept, communal settlement concept, in their collective farming program. You know this is the practice of communism? But there's a difference. Israel is practicing collective farming with a God. Russia is practicing collective farming without a God. The Russians are saying we don't need God. Israel is saying we do need a God. Israel has a Jehovah God. Russia has not. This is most important because, you see, Russia will view this as a very successful experiment and a dangerous contamination upon all of the other satellite countries who also want a God with their collective finances. If Russia does not stamp out
and stop Israel from successful collective farming with a Jehovah God, other communistic countries will wonder why they can't have, and the whole communistic ideology will begin to shake. Russia has some real reason to go down there and do something to that country. I believe when Russia invades Israel, the issue will not only be Israel's survivability or its feud with the Arabs, but I believe it's a world issue of communistic ideology. Fourth reason for the invasion of Israel sells oil, often called black gold. Russia wants communism to dominate the whole Middle East. Billions of dollars are being spent by Russia to rearm Egypt, Syria, Iraq. Large segments of Russians are already in Egypt. But why does Russia want to dominate it? Oil. Lots of oil. Middle East oil. For not only Russian mechanization, but to control the flow of it to the Western countries. You know, the tanks and guns and airplanes and so forth don't move unless they have oil, gasoline. Weaponry today comes to a halt unless there is oil. The fourth phase, the last phase of Jacob's trouble, will be a miraculous intervention to save Israel against unbelievable odds by the Lord of hosts. Now the scriptures say that when Russia, with its allies, invades Israel, she will not only be defeated and turned back, but 84%, it says 84% will be killed and destroyed. I don't know how these statistics impress you, but let me assure you that when you lose 84% of your army, an awesome calamity must have occurred. And you know, it isn't Israel with their tanks and jets that will do this, but God himself with some kind of a natural phenomenon that will cause a state of confusion. And I look at it this way. This is conjecture. The way I look at it, by the natural phenomenon, I mean something meteorological or geological or astronomical that will cause Russia and its allies, instead of going after Israel, it will confuse them, and I believe that the Russians and the allies will be fighting themselves, thinking that this is the enemy. They will lose sight. Their organization will be completely disorganized. Now, this natural phenomenon could be many things. Just have a very hot day. That's all you have to have. I'm saying this is what's going to happen. But that's all you have to have is a very hot day. What happens? Water boils out of the tank. The whole mechanism comes to a halt. Excessive wind. That's all you have. You know, we don't have to think of God doing something great. Just a little thing by the Lord. Take care of this matter. Excessive wind. You can't see. In California just recently, I experienced one of these windstorms. That could be terrible. I'd take my glasses off, otherwise they'd be pitted in 5 minutes. We don't know what really is to come and suggest an earthquake. And we really don't know. But we do know this. We know that some natural calamity will occur, which will cause, it's not going to be Israeli tanks that's going to beat the Russian-Soviet clock. They don't have that many tanks. They don't have that technical capability. But some natural calamity that will come in, which will completely disorganize, and here is the most important thing. It will be Russia that will know that it was God who saved Israel. It will be Russia that will tell Israel that it was your God that saved you. Look at the text. It's the most exciting thing that you could hear. Read. Read. Remember, in Ezekiel, it says,
through God will Israel know that God intervened on their behalf. Through God will let all the nations know that Jehovah saved Israel. Now, we've touched on four phases of Jacob's trouble. I'm going to move up ahead here. We've got to complete our description of these phases by identifying one more thing, the rates of change. And remember, basically, Jacob's trouble is nothing mysterious. It's just simply the trouble that's associated with Israel in its regathering, the trouble that has happened. Now, you know, the brethren and Bible students are at odds. Some are saying it's still in the future. Some are saying it's not. Some are saying it was yesterday. And I think what we're doing is sampling different aspects of a very complex process. The major part of the trouble is still future. Obviously. Because the regathering hasn't been complete. But part of it started. It started back when 15 Russian Jews set soil on Israel. And they started the trouble. See? And we're having trouble right now, so we're in a part of it. But the major part is still in the future, and we look for a kind of crescendo. The phases will grow. The crescendo heightens. And if we think of a graph, 1870, 1881, with Peter Kiska, 15 Russian Jews, 1948, the birth of Israel, the curve goes up. In 1956, the Sinai campaign, the curve keeps going up. 1967, the Six-Day War, the curve goes way up. Trouble. Intensity of trouble. And then we look for the next date when God invades. Trouble to the nth degree. Let me conclude then by saying that these are the order of events in Jacob's trouble. Israel will regather as a nation. This has been completed. Russia will emerge as a world power. This has been completed. Israel will go through a series of skirmishes and short wars to expand and annex land and increase their population so as to fill the promise made on Pisgah's mountain. We are currently in this period. God, the Prince of Russia, an aggressive and strong Russian leader, will emerge. We look forward to this happening. Israel will enjoy a period of forced peace and great success in collective farming due to technological breakthroughs and desalinization. We look forward to this. Israel will confront Russia on several issues, giving up acquired land, Jerusalem, communistic collective farming, immigration of Russian Jews, and oil. This will precipitate the invasion and attempted strangulation of Israel's nationalism. And the United States will either be neutral or join Russia. Incidentally, we've got to remember that at the same time, there is what we call Armageddon going on in the world. You can't ignore what's going on in the world. The United States will have its own bag of problems. The miraculous intervention will occur when an awful calamity will stop. In the midst of this experience, Israel shall look on him whom they fear, their Messiah, and they will accept him. The Lord says, neither will I hide my face any more from them. For I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith the Lord. The miraculous deliverance of Israel will mark the beginning of kingdom blessings flowing out of it to Israel and to the world. What a great consummation of the divine plan for all nations and
the sun.